A city is stronger together. So let's hear from the business and community leaders that keep Milwaukee on the upswing. Presented by Horicon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Now here's the host that's always on the upswing, WTMJ's Jeff Sherman.
Now, to business, gentlemen.
Welcome to the Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. As always, a big thank you to the community-minded, wonderful people at Horicon Bank. Today on the show, we're talking the future of almost everything, how AI is messing with what we share, how we lead, and who actually gets paid to be creative. We're going to talk leadership and burnout and this kind of AI hype cycle that we're in, why magazines are getting dragged for using AI art instead of hiring real artists, and why Milwaukee just got named the best city in America for creatives. It's almost officially summer, June 21st, the first official day of summer. Incidentally, my birthday as well, just note. But we're going to end the show with Martin Moore with some fun. Talk about movies, some bucket lists, and maybe even start a fight about the best burger in Milwaukee. Looking forward to that for sure. But as we do at the beginning of each and every show, we're going to go two up.
Up one, two.
Now it's time for the
two, count 'em, two.
Two up on the upswing.
Two up, two things in the business and community world that I'm seeing that you need to know about right now. The Mayor's Design Awards are out, 29th annual. Mayor's Design Awards recognize projects through excellence in design across the entire city. Always love looking at these winners. They include the new downtown dog park, a Bronzeville bookstore, and the Milwaukee Reps redeveloped theater complex on Wells Street. The awards were given in categories like places and spaces, vibrant corridors, urbanism redefined. And everything begins at home. Recipients were honored for enhancing neighborhoods through construction, restoration, and property improvements. A couple other projects that really stood out here. One, South Shore Beach got an award. South Shore Beach, the relocation that moved the beach just about 400 feet, but added way more public access infrastructure and helped mitigate some of the stormwater management features, which is truly important. And then King Drive, the streetscape and the Brush Mural initiative, added all these gateway monument signage, really became even more of a beacon in that neighborhood. Congrats to the good people at the King Drive bid for that award. Second up, Consumer Confidence, the monthly survey from the Conference Board this week said that consumer confidence edged downward a bit in May as inflationary effects of the conflict in the Middle East intensified. Research groups said on Tuesday from this week that consumer confidence index fell from 93.1 in May from 93.8 in April. Economists had expected 92, but there's some breakout in age group here. Consumers between the age of 35 and 54 said, all right, you know, things are okay. But then you look at the older generation and younger consumers, a little bit more of a rub. I think no matter what age you are, you look through June 4th, there's a lot of confidence and a lot of good deals to be had at Milwaukee Downtown's 20th edition of Downtown Dining Week. It runs, as I said, through June 4th. All you got to do is go to MilwaukeeDowntown.com or DowntownDiningMKE.com. Ton of great deals, $15 and $25 for lunch, $35, $45, $55 for dinner. And if you do the survey after Downtown Dining Week, you get a chance to win $400 in Downtown Dining Week gift cards. So put that on your list. Confidence is always high for me in downtown dining.
It's time to fast forward. Welcome to the future of almost everything in Wisconsin on the upswing. Joining WTMJ's Jeff Sherman, here's Martin Moore.
Welcome back to the Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. It is the future of almost everything. Our good friend Martin Moore back in studio. Happy almost June, Martin.
Whew. I tell you what, time is flying. I'm very excited for summertime, but like I feel like it just gets here, and then it's 4th of July,
yeah,
and then it's like whatever the holiday is in September, and then it's winter again. So I'm really trying to just take my time, take a breath, enjoy every day.
Take it all in.
And
yes.
Just slow things down.
Well, that's why at the end of this show, we're going to do some summer bucket list things. We're going to talk about the best burgers in the area. So keep on listening. We're going to fill your summer with fun. But to start off here, Martin, we've been doing this segment for a couple of years now here on The Upswing. It's the future of almost everything. When you hear the word future, what does that spark in you? Is it excitement? Is it dread? Is it a little bit of both?
I would say a lot of excitement. Optimism is another word I might use. You like to think that the future brings positive change and new innovations to all of the things. And, when I think about the future, those are kind of the words. I'm not a very cynical person.
Okay, that's good. That's good.
Excitement, optimism.
All right. That's why we align on many things. I like that. So what's the future of leadership in one word?
Because
we're going to talk about this later.
I would say trust.
Trust. All right.
That would be the word that I would use.
Okay, I like that. I'm going to go collaboration. What about the future of creativity? Because that's ever-changing for sure.
Originality.
All right. I'm going to go listening. It might be a little bit of a wild card answer there.
I like that.
What about the future of cities like Milwaukee?
Intrepid.
Intrepid. Ooh, interesting. I always
if you don't know what that word means, it means like approaching things with a fearless sort of
going slowly into the night, but quickly as well. I always cop out on this one. I go lack of pretense. So like that's three words, but it's a concept.
I like it.
All right. So the through line here is we're gonna talk a bit about how AI is changing what we share, how we lead, what it means to get paid to be creative today. And I want to start with this. There's a new kind of anxiety out there, Martin. Creator anxiety about AI scraping posts. AI influencers repackaging all of our ideas. You create a ton online. You post a lot online. Do you ever hesitate to post because you think, well, this AI bot is going to steal it or remix it or not give you the credit?
100%. Yeah, I struggle with the fact that we have all these massive AI platforms like Gemini and Copilot and ChatGPT and all of them. And the only way that these systems exist is if we feed it photos of our kids and the videos and TikToks that we edited and the copy that we spent all night and hours on. So that it can just regurgitate it and give it and then sell it back to us. Yeah. I struggle with that. I don't like that because I think it's just an inferior product to what an actual human being can do with just a little bit of time and brain power.
So what feels different today about just AI copying versus normal internet browsing and cutting and pasting?
I mean, cutting and pasting isn't any different. I mean, theft is theft.
Yeah.
I think where the bifurcation is when it comes to creativity is, you know, when you're cruising the internet and you're researching things or, you know, you're listening to different music or watching different videos and then you come up with an idea for something, human creativity is interpretive. AI, in air quotes, creativity is derivative, meaning it's predicated on stealing someone else's part of a music or part of an image or whatever. Human beings take the world in and then they sort of mix it all up in their brain and then spit out something that that can be original. There may be bits and pieces of it that, you know, were taken from something or inspired them. But human beings can create from nothing. AI can't create from nothing. AI needs a human being to create. Human beings don't need AI to create.
So you think we're all thinking a little too much about, well, what ideas are worth sharing publicly now and which ones are worth just keeping private? You think we're all having that conversation a little bit more?
Oh, yeah. I think, and it's brands in particular, and this is because I work for a brand, you know, your creative IP is very, very important. And as soon as you put that out into the world and you let these AI models sniff it and train themselves, your competitors can use it and other people can use it. And, you know, it really, all of that just devalues the human creativity. And you know, I think you do have to be careful with.
Well, and it also makes trust, authenticity, and true leadership all that much more important.
100%.
And if you, you know, you can't keep leadership principles, well, maybe you should keep the leadership principles in your paper notebooks now and not post them all over. But the reality is that AI, I think, could, especially in a younger generation, fuel a little bit of a leadership crisis.
Oh, yeah, big time.
And I saw this piece recently that, you know, I think some leaders are really being have a sense of overwhelm now, and they're chasing the AI hype, and the culture can kind of take over, prioritize the tech over people.
Yep.
I think, like you always say, you can nuance it and do both. But what are you seeing in terms of leadership principles that are being compromised in this AI era?
I'm seeing a big lack of patience from leaders. I'm seeing a lot of leaders, not all, but a lot of leaders just saying, throw it in a ChatGPT, throw it in a Copilot, let's use Gemini, rather than trusting the people they hired to do a job and giving them the time and space to do their job. They're using AI as a crutch rather than a tool. And what I worry is that as the current generation of leaders sort of phases out over the next 10 or 15 years, we're going to have a new generation of leaders who grow up with AI, who grew up using it not as a tool, but as a resource and a foundational piece of how they lead and run things in their vision. And I think that is going to create a leadership crisis and a big, big, big problem.
Yeah. What I like what we're doing here at Good Karma Brands is we're being taught to implement it and to go into the platforms own speed. Because, you know, you still are going to have that trust. You're going to have that authenticity. You're going to pause before you pour into it. And you're going to figure out, wow, there are certain systems and processes that will need to be implemented, but it's not an end-all, be-all for everything I'm going to do throughout my day.
I don't like when even businesses say, you know, we're going to start using AI. Well, give me a reason why. Is there a reason we need to use it? Or you just want to use it because you were at a networking event or listened to a podcast or read a book that says you should be using AI? Do you really need it? Is it really going to be better off? You know, are you going to create an AI policy that is going to make sure that you don't get sued for something? Because, you know, you have brands out here that are making generative AI photos and videos and writing copy and creating legal. And all of that stuff is stolen and scraped. And there could be IP in there. There could be trademarks that you're infringing on. And so I don't think leaders and businesses have thought as deeply about this as they probably should. And by the time Congress catches up to this with laws and rules and regulations, your stuff is out there, and it may be too late, and you may open yourself up to all kinds of liabilities and lawsuits.
Especially when it comes to creativity that we're going to talk about when we come back next. But quickly, as we go into the next segment, what should a good leader today do to get AI right? Is it learning it? Is it setting boundaries? Is it communicating expectations? What are you seeing?
To get AI right, you need to understand what you're using and what those implications are for your brand identity, your brand language, your culture in your business, and the future of your employees. You need to understand what you're using. This AI is one of those rare things that just seems like this magic wand that you can wave and it can do everything for you. And it can to an extent, but it comes with nuances and caveats. And it comes with a certain sort of respect that you have to have as a leader and as a business owner and as a CEO.
When we come back, there's a simple solution for AI in creativity. Hire a damn artist. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined by Martin Moore. It's the future of almost everything. A Los Angeles Magazine AI-generated cover triggered a bunch of backlash, reignited this whole debate that's been ongoing whether or not organizations, especially media companies, should use AI-generated visuals instead of paying artists. You work for a major brand, costs in the area.
Oh, yeah.
Is using AI art, is it a budget choice or is it a values choice?
It's a creative choice.
Okay. All right. But that could be both. Where do you come down? Like, designing an ad for headphones.
Sure, sure. I think
you're going to entertain the use.
I think there's
the
a big difference between using AI for an ad like, I mean, we're talking about generative AI for the listeners, you know, something that maybe generative AI for a video or an image or something versus maybe like some sort of publication or definitely some sort of news organization or publication. There should be no place for generative AI in those sorts of spaces. But I think as a brand, I think there is a creative space for it when used correctly. I use generative AI.
It can be a pretty useful tool.
For sure. So, for example, product photos. We have moved away from doing renders, digital renders of product photos. I shoot about 6 or 7 images. I photo stack them. They don't always align up perfectly, and I use Adobe's generative AI to sort of fix and rebuild certain little pieces. There's other things that generative AI lets me do where I can maybe create a headphone in a situation or a room that I otherwise just wouldn't be able to photograph. But I do that with some nuance. The actual headphone that you see is a real image that I shot, and all I do is sort of change the background. And I do that on a case-to-case basis and an as-needed basis. I don't do it a lot. I don't use it a lot.
Yeah.
But I'm very hyper-aware of when I do it and if it's appropriate. And then, you know, per our AI policy, every image we create gets flagged and tagged with, depending if it's 50% or more AI, with that tag. So that for historic purposes, 10, 15, 20 years down the road, right, someone goes through our files, they know that this part of this image,
it's anchored to the source code, if you will, the source creative.
Correctly.
Yes. All right. Well, I mean, I think all this gets really interesting because while some big outlets are maybe replacing artists a bit with some of the AI tools, a new report just called Milwaukee the best city in the country for creatives.
I love it.
Now, the report came from Squarespace, which is a web development online platform. Milwaukee ranked top city in the country for creatives, beating out Chicago, yep, Minneapolis, Los Angeles.
Not surprised.
If you told the 20-year-old Martin Moore,
mm-hmm,
you looked ahead and Milwaukee was at the top of a national ranking for creativity, would you have believed it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've always believed that. Even back before I did my vlog in 2014, 2015, even when I was playing music and I was bands, you know, back in the early and mid-2000s, I've always had this mantra and ethos that Milwaukee is just ripe for anyone to pop off. You know, like, I always hear people go, I'm going to go to Chicago, I'm going to go to LA, I'm going to go to New York. All you find there is more competition, more people that want to do the exact same thing. Here, whether you're a musician, whether you're a photographer, a filmmaker, a puppeteer, whatever, trapeze artist, you can pop off because there's a lot of people doing a lot of things, but there's nobody who's really sort of crowned themselves the queen or king of whatever in the creative space. And so there's so much opportunity to thrive and move and own the creative space and whatever you're in a city like Milwaukee versus something like LA or Chicago.
So in terms of the headline and maybe the shift here, and I think you nailed the headline because you look deep into the study, Milwaukee has some of the highest concentration per capita of performance venues,
yep,
and spaces to go into to create your art, mm-hmm, to get paid for it, small, medium, large size, whatever it may be, music, performing arts. But does this city really work for artists and founders and builders? And on the flip side, what doesn't work in a market our size?
I mean, I'll start with the negative one. What doesn't work is the fact that we are a smaller city, that we can't expect the rest of the country and the world to sort of place a value on the city of Milwaukee and the people who live here and create here and work here and start businesses here. We have to create that value ourselves, and we have to value that value ourselves. And I think that is sort of a negative thing. That unfortunately, living in Milwaukee and being a creator or an entrepreneur comes with versus, oh, you're from New York. There's a credibility you get there that sometimes isn't earned. Oh, you're from LA. Oh, you must be a famous actor or musician or whatever. You don't get that. You tell someone, oh, I'm a hip hop artist from Milwaukee. They're like, oh, so you haven't made it big yet, you know? Right. And so I think that sort of negative connotation that we're just this beer, cheese, and baseball city that can't have thriving artists and creatives and businesses, I think is a struggle, and one that, you know, has always bugged me.
Hey, to your New York point, I'm looking down the list, and I got Milwaukee on top. I got to go all the way down to 19 to see New York City.
Love it.
So
I like
there
it.
You go. There like you go. It. But I always say a city is only as good as the stories it tells.
Yes.
Right? And I think we all
you
have the
that.
Responsibility to tell those stories. Mm-hmm. But how should we tell that story to the world without sounding like maybe a tourism brochure, mm-hmm. maybe sounding like God bless all the people at the Chamber of Commerce and all the people doing wonderful work each and every day. But how should Milwaukee package and tell its story?
You know, I think there's nothing wrong with leaning in to our heritage and our history because we are. We're an old city. We have a lot of history. You know, we have, I think a lot of people overlook the fact that, you know, we sort of, you know, brought the entire beer industry to the country and the yeah. world. And we have companies like Harley Davidson and Koss and all these brands that have made such an impact. And I think we really just need to lean into things that make us special and make us unique. And try not to try and peddle the come to Milwaukee because we love cheese and we've got beer and, you know, all the tropes and yeah. the and the things that we're known for and we think is funny. But I would like to see people take the city a little bit more seriously when it comes to sort of advertising it as a place to create and live and travel to and all of those things.
So if Milwaukee is... Let's think of it this way. If Milwaukee's a person walking into a room at a networking event, mm-hmm. how are you going to describe them right now?
A middle-aged person who's worked the same job for 25 or 30 years and finally took a chance on themselves and chased their dream and is now becoming who they really were supposed to be.
I like that.
All along. Everybody says, oh, Milwaukee, I've known you for 25, 30 years. You know, I know all about you and your beer and your cheese. I know who you are. Well, no, I've taken a big leap.
Those are all side dishes
those are all,
now, right?
I've yeah. taken a much bigger step. This is who I am now. And that, so that's sort of, as
like
a person,
that.
That's how I would pitch
I like that.
Milwaukee.
Yeah, I like, you know, someone that has deep roots, strong values, but still has this chip on their shoulder mm-hmm. because they're being overlooked. Mm-hmm. And they don't like that. And they need, and mm-hmm. they need to really figure out how to be more quietly confident all the time.
Yes.
And I think we are, hold
quiet
back
confidence.
Sometimes.
I like that.
We need to really sell, and be okay with that.
You see that a lot with our athletes who are in this city, Bobby Portis and Giannis and a lot of the Brewers players. You know, people always ask what it's like living in a small market city and playing in a small market city. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah.
I don't get bothered, and there's so much innovation here and creativity here, and, you know, they're putting our pictures, murals and stuff that everybody sees, and so, you know, leaning into that and realizing that we're not just some small up-and-coming city. We are the city that is at the top of all these lists, whether it's travel, being an entrepreneur, best place to create. Milwaukee is hitting the top of all the lists.
And I always say, Martin, that when you look at the things, maybe the stories that are undertold in our market, mm-hmm. I think it's the boomerang that when people leave the Midwest,
yep.
Milwaukee even more so, you leave for 5 years, 10 years, you boomerang back
yep.
because, wow. I missed my family. I missed this ease of getting around. I missed all this creativity that I didn't truly appreciate
when I was here.
The grass
was not greener.
That's right.
Literally.
So I think we as a market really need to lean into the boomerang strategy when we look at talent recruitment and retention.
Absolutely.
All right. We're going to zoom out, Martin, when we get back from city branding. We're going to talk about two other, futures that people care deeply about. I want to do one tech toy thing with you, and then we're going to talk about summer fun. This is the future of almost everything. Martin Moore, Jeff Sherman, you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. It's the future of almost everything. Martin Moore joins us in studio. Martin, always appreciate you taking time
out of your
day. I
always love that you pronounce my name correctly.
Who pronounces it wrong?
I don't know. So a lot of people say Martin Moore.
Moore.
Like M-O-R-E. There's two R's.
Moore.
Or two O's.
All yeah, right.
Moore.
That's good. I'll give you that extended
I've never thanked
Moore.
You for that, Jeff.
Oh, well, hey, you're very welcome. I spend a lot of time on the pronunciation of the names of our wonderful guests. All right. I've seen some rumors and references lately that AirPods, maybe similar wearables, are going to kind of start blurring the lines between earbuds and AR glasses. Extent Apple, bunch of sources are reporting, going to launch some AirPods with little mini cameras on the stem. So would you use a mini camera, tiny camera in your ear? And if so, something like this is going to happen. What are the use cases and what are the privacy concerns as you're walking around with a little mini camera?
You know, I find it hard to believe that something like AirPods would get cameras. I mean, that's an absolute battery suck. I guess it would depend on what they were using it for. If it was something like having a camera on each one for sort of situational awareness, and you had AI algorithms that could tell a runner or someone on a bicycle that a car was coming, and you could lower the input frame rate to something like 5 or 10 FPS, I could see how that can maybe be some sort of battery efficient thing where, you know, it can be a safety thing.
Could it integrate into maps, and AI to
I don't know
show
that people are taking selfies and pictures with it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be overly concerned about privacy. I remember when, you know, dumb phones started getting cameras and all over the news, it was like, no one's safe. You can't go to the mall or the grocery store without being on someone's, well, we all know how that panned out. So the privacy thing I'm not very worried about. I guess just the practical implications, I really only see it being advantageous for sort of situational awareness.
Okay. All right.
Potentially.
Something to keep a proverbial eye
and
ear on, because the next level of the work.
You always
got to
add some
new
feature so that they can sell you the next
one. That's right. I mean, it probably won't be long.
You can't just play music.
Indeed. Well, it won't be long before
God forbid.
We have the wearables and we can watch the movie as we're walking down the street. But, you know, the movie theaters still want us to come to the theater, especially for the big blockbusters.
Greg Marcus would like us our butts in the seats.
That's right. Don't watch the movie on the wearable. Come to my theaters.
Yes.
So ComScore and Bloomberg say $4.1 to $4.3 billion in U.S. and Canada box office is a target for this summer, which could bring the movie business back to pre-pandemic levels. You look at the lineup, we're already seeing
nice
some
lineup.
Big hits. You got Devil Wears Prada 2 that's done well. You got the new Star Wars. There's a new Toy Story. There's a new Scary Movie.
The Odyssey,
Jackass, Minions, Paw Patrol for the kids.
Like the new Steven Spielberg movie.
Yes. So basically, I want to get your take here, Martin. Are we living in this like sequel multiverse? Are you comfortable with that? Are you kind of exhausted that all we're doing each and every summer is seeing all these sequels?
Oh, yeah. I'm exhausted with it, but it is now an unfortunate byproduct of something we all asked for, which was to be untethered from the cable companies. And we wanted to be able to pick and choose the streaming services and the companies that where we get our entertainment. And that sort of snowballed into the subscription services, and it became very lucrative and more cost effective to release things as a series and sell subscription services and just put the movies on streaming. And what you're left with is just, you know, IP like Marvel and Toy Story and Star Wars that you're just going to keep getting more and more iterations of that. And we're going to get very few original stories like The Odyssey and the new Steven Spielberg movie as time goes on. And unfortunately, it's a losing scenario. Yeah. And I think movie theaters need to figure out, they should have already figured this out since COVID, and the fact that they haven't and reverted back to the way that they run business as usual, they should have come up with a better plan to sort of accommodate this new, because yes, we may get back to pre-pandemic levels for the summer. Well, then what happens? You know, like Steven Spielberg and Christopher Nolan can only release so many movies every couple of years.
Right.
So you can't just rely on them. They're not going to make Devil Wears Prada 15.
Yeah.
You know,
I think there's still a niche audience that really appreciates long-form, deep storytelling that's original.
I do.
And not the nostalgia of the sequel or the series. But the reality is nostalgia from a business standpoint in theaters works because you get the cross generations.
Yep.
You get the new maybe 14-year-old going with the 82-year-old grandfather to see something that they all kind of know what it's going to bring them in terms of entertainment utility.
Do you
and
think
you
there
know
can?
What?
Do you
as
think
long as the popcorn's good, I'm going to be there.
Do you think there can be an IP, the next Harry Potter, the next Star Wars, the next Marvel, or do you think that's too big of a gamble for studios to throw in the theater?
I think somebody like a Disney can create a new character that you start on Disney Plus and kind of do the ramp up into a movie. I think Disney has the capability to do that.
Do you think they would?
I don't know if they will, but they'll probably
Because that's
softly try without saying
the
they're
pickle
really trying.
Is, you know, you have Paramount and you have Warner and you have Disney who are the big players in releasing movies into the theater. They also have streaming services and shareholders. And
true.
Why release it in the theater when I can sell subscription services?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It will be interesting for sure. So many different ways to tap in to the entertainment scene. All right, Martin, when we come back, let's fill our Upswing summer bucket list. You good with that? Welcome back to the Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined in studio by Martin Moore. It's the future of almost everything. So other than movies, Martin, this summer, give me three things that are on your summer bucket list.
One, get my May Milwaukee Boat Line cruise in, which I have, the clock is ticking. Ooh. So me and my wife,
okay,
every month that MKE Boat Line is
nice
running, we do the cruise through the river, have a little cocktail, go out. To just try new things. The older I've gotten, the more it's spring, summer, fall, winter, spring, summer, fall, winter. And this year, I'm really trying to be intentional about doing things that make me uncomfortable or maybe out of the realm of what I would normally do, to sort of just slow things down and make this year feel a little bit different and stand out so that it doesn't get lost with a decade of my summers looking identical.
Yeah. I like it. I am going to be, last weekend we did a run, my son and I, down the lakefront, right across from the Colectivo, right by the Milwaukee Yacht Club. There is this place called the Roundhouse.
Yes, I love that place.
Milwaukee County Park. Oh, it's amazing.
It is. Isn't it fantastic?
It's a little kind of hidden beer garden.
Yep.
The food is wonderful. Great. It's a really wonderful mix of people. So I'm going to make a point to go to the Roundhouse.
The building's
more
awesome. Like,
yeah,
it's like
it's
this
great
cool sort of like yachty, harbory, you know, marine, like round venue.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
It's just cool. The food
feels like kind of San Francisco-esque.
It does.
When you're in there, like the fishermen and then like the, I don't know, suburban. Yeah.
If you're in the
dude
city and you're
like
looking for
great
just a great little lunch spot and a beer or a carb list or something like that, and you just want to kind of look at the lake and stuff, Roundhouse downtown, it's in McKinley Marina. You'll find parking, the food, like it's just a vibe.
Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah. Two other things. I'm going to make sure that we get to the Madison Farmers Market. It's been a couple years since I've done that. And then I'm always kind of like, all right, we're going to Cops. We're going to Gilly's. We're doing the standard custard thing. I want to get to one of the Mexican ice cream shops on Milwaukee South Side. Like the flavors are so abundant there. And just I got to make a point to go to different places for different types of ice cream because I get too locked in on
it's,
the places.
It's easy
that we
to sort of default to what, what you know is going to be good.
Yes.
And every time you go to somewhere new or try something new, you're always surprised. You're like, I got to do this more often, and then you don't.
All right. Finally, Martin, beef prices are at historic highs due to kind of a simple supply and demand thing. I found this research just yesterday. The U.S. cattle herd has shrunk to its lowest level since 1951.
Mm-hmm.
So prices are up. But reality is, we're in Wisconsin. We love our beer. We love our brats. We love our burgers. If you're going for a burger in Greater Milwaukee, actually anywhere in Wisconsin.
I was hoping you were
going to
say
anywhere. Where are you going? Because I know you're a Wisconsin traveler because I've seen your post recently.
I was just in Prairie du Chien this past weekend, and I came across this. And shout out to anyone who's listening who's from Prairie. I don't even know. This goes that far to Prairie, right?
Yeah, of course.
Went to this little place called Pete's Hamburger Stand. They make one kind of burger.
Okay.
It's just this greasy burger with or without onions, no cheese, on a soggy bun, and it was 10 out of 10, no notes. It may have been one of the best burgers I've ever had. I immediately was like, yeah, I could do another one. It's just
Prairie
this tiny little Prairie du Chien, Pete's Hamburger Stand. It's right on the main drag. You can't miss it. It's like a little, it's not like a food truck. It's like one of them food trucks that's like permanently.
Okay. All right.
Amazing.
Prairie du Chien reminds me of driving to my grandparents in Nora Springs, Iowa. We'd always flow through Prairie du Chien and see the, there was a Pink Elephant Hotel back in the day. I think the Pink Elephant still stands there. All right. I'm going to walk very close here. There is a new place called Draft & Co. that's been open for about a year now. They do a Taco Burger Tuesday, every Tuesday. Taco Burger Tuesday, a little play on
Taco
Tuesday. Only $9. It's black Angus beef patty, cheese, taco seasoning, lettuce, tomato, sour cream. It's amazing.
Stop talking dirty.
Oh, a wonderful burger right here in the heart of Milwaukee. Put it on your list. Oh, actually, I'll buy you one the next time.
We need to go out and do something. Let's go get the taco burger.
Done. All right. The future of almost everything. Always appreciate Martin Moore's time. Martin, enjoy the summer, but we'll see you again next month. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Finally, I want to end with something happening just a few minutes from where we all work here at WTMJ. Milwaukee just advanced a $3 million plan to turn 38 vacant lots in the King Park neighborhood into new homes. Money's going to come from property tax revenue generated by the Brewery District. That's the old Pabst Brewery site that's been totally reborn as offices and housing and nightlife. If the full Common Council signs off next week, the city would spend about $200,000 buying privately owned lots and roughly $1.3 million on basic infrastructure. We're talking the water mains, the sewers, all the site prep, and another $1.5 million aimed at building new affordable housing on those parcels. It's one piece of a larger, roughly $22 million plan to reinvest the brewery tax dollars in nearby streets, traffic calming, public improvements, upgrades to King Park itself, old athletic fields there, and they have an old skating rink that needs rehab. Now, some of the members of the council are pressing for the city to use its revive programs to do more, even more work on vacant and city-owned lots in different neighborhoods as well. We'll see how that all comes together. But no matter what, this is an example of how we take and find value in one part of the city and place it intentionally in another part of the city. That's what economic development's all about. So as you go about your day, maybe ask yourself, if $3 million redirected in tax revenue can reshape 30 empty lots in Milwaukee, what could it do in your block? What could it do in your community? What could it do in that corridor that you're like, wow, it needs something new? The neighborhood you care about, there's creative ways to make development happy, and this is just another example of how Milwaukee's making it happen each and every day.